Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with attorney and activist Kevin Zeis, who has been active in third-party politics and served as Ralph Nader's press secretary and spokesman in 2004. He's recently been active in the Occupy DC movement, and we will discuss how the growing disgust with Congress might benefit third-party movements, as well as the future direction of the Occupy movements. Then the author of They Knew They Were Right, The Rise of the Neocons, Jacob Halbrun, joins us to critique the latest Republican presidential candidate's debate on national security that featured a panel of questioners representing the pantheon of neoconservative hawks responsible for the last decade's disastrous wars and deficits. We will discuss the candidate's performance and positions as well as the possible return of the neocons. Then finally, Bruce Fein joins us. He is a senior advisor to the Ron Paul 2012 presidential campaign, and we will talk about the Republican outlier whose defense and foreign policy stance is at odds with the rest of the Republican presidential candidates. And although Ron Paul elicits rousing cheers from the debate audience, he is treated with uncomfortable scorn by the other candidates on stage and is largely ignored by the press. Joining me now is attorney and activist Kevin Zeis, who is the co-director of It's Our Economy, director of Come Home America, and serves on the steering committees of the Bradley Manning Support Network and October2011.org. He's been active in third-party electoral politics and served as Ralph Nader's press secretary and spokesperson in 2004 and ran for Maryland's U.S. Senate seat on the Green Party ticket in 2006 and was the only person ever nominated by the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, and the Populist Party. Welcome to Background Briefing, Kevin Zeis.
Thank you for having me on, Ian.
And to the question of the growing disgust with Congress, not the least of which was the recent display of fecklessness over the so-called super committees. And prior to that, of course, the polls gave the Congress 9% support in this country. Frankly, who are this 9%? God knows what it's down to now. Do you see this as some kind of an opening for a third party?
Well, I'm not sure about third party. We have a very corrupt electoral system. They make the two parties put up all sorts of hurdles, ballot access, getting into debates, monetary hurdles for third party candidates. It's almost impossible to run for president as a third party candidate in this country with all the anti-democratic legislation that the two parties have put in place all over the country. So I'm not sure about that, but I think that the super committee did give an opening to the Occupy movement. We use it as an opportunity on OccupyWashingtonDC.org to hold our own Occupy Super Committee hearing. We also put out our own deficit report, the 98% deficit proposal. And we laid out a plan that actually showed how easy it was to actually fix the deficit and get the economy moving again, create millions of jobs. It really was a doable task. The reason why you can't see it done in Congress or the White House is because both are corrupted by big money. They will not challenge the 1%. You know, when you have 400 people who have the wealth of $154 million, and those 400 people pay only 17.4% average tax, while working-class Americans pay 30% or 25% income tax, it's an unfair system. And the fact that the Congress and both parties would not put in place a real progressive tax structure is the reason we can't get the economy moving again and have the money to invest in a real jobs program, a real new energy program, a real new economy for the 21st century. These are all solvable problems, but the corruption of government, the unwillingness to end the wars and cut the military and face it to 1% is why we can't get these policies in place.
Well, Kevin Zeis, just up in New Hampshire, the president was heckled by some of the Occupy Wall Street movement. Well, I guess in this case, it's probably Occupy New Hampshire. But in any case, one of the protesters managed to get a note to the president, which reads, "Mr. President, over 4,000 peaceful protesters have been arrested, while banksters continue to destroy the economy with impunity. You must stop the assault on our First Amendment rights. Your silence sends a message that police brutality is acceptable. Banks got bailed out. We got sold out." So that...
Well, that's a powerful statement, and there's so much truth in it. I'd love to hear President Obama's answer. I'm sure he'd say it's up to the local jurisdictions, it's up to the mayors, blah, blah, blah. But he is the President of the United States. We've seen the local police militarized in recent decades by U.S. military equipment and training going to police forces. Now we're seeing how that plays out on U.S. citizens, as we saw at Davis, and as we've seen in New York, and as we've seen in Chicago, and many in Oakland. Many cities now we see these paramilitary forces used against American civilians who are doing something the Constitution really expects us to do. We, the people, in order to form a more perfect union. We are assembling to redress grievances as is protected by the Constitution. We're using our First Amendment rights to express our free speech. And the result against these nonviolent protesters, and it's almost uniformly nonviolent on the occupied movement's part, is to have this police brutality. And I haven't heard a policeman yet who's been charged with any criminal offense. Those officers at UC Davis have been suspended. They should be criminally charged. What they did was an assault on innocent civilians who were sitting peaceably expressing their opinion to redress grievances. And we have serious grievances in this country. I don't think this country's been more off track at any time in my life, and I'm 56 years old. And President Obama should step up and speak up. When you saw the civil rights abuses in the 1960s, John Kennedy and later Bobby Kennedy both spoke up against it. Where is President Obama? Where is the constitutional law professor? Where is the person in charge of this country? He is silent. It's an embarrassment. And rather than prosecuting these bankers who destroyed the economy by their greed and who are still destroying their economy by hoarding their wealth, overseas hiding income, and at home doing the same, what we see is President Obama pointing them to his cabinet. We have J.P. Morgan as the chief of staff. We have the Department of Treasury, Geithner, who is the Federal Reserve head in New York, where the epicenter of the problem. We have Rahm Emanuel, the previous chief of staff, who was an investment broker as well, who made $16 million in less than 2 years of trading. I mean, these are people who are ripping off the society, and they're getting rewarded rather than prosecuted by President Obama. This is why the Occupy movement will not support President Obama. And for people like Van Jones and Rebuild the Dream to try to co-opt this movement, as they are doing, as I have an article in Salon about, you can see it in Salon tonight. Van Jones, the Move On, Campaign for America's Future, Rebuild the Dream, and other Democratic Party front groups are trying to co-opt this movement and make it support Democratic candidates. It's not going to happen. The Democratic Party is not the solution. It is part of the problem.
Well, I suppose, Kevin, though, the president actually on Tuesday in New Hampshire, in response to the note that I just read, he said a lot of folks have been down in New York and all across the country in the Occupy movement. There's a profound sense of frustration. There's a profound sense of frustration about the fact that the essence of the American dream, which is if you work hard, if you stick to it, then you can make it. That feels like it's slipping away, and it's not the way things are supposed to be, not here, not in America.
That's a nice statement. How about coming on police abuse? How about saying that how about the Department of Justice investigating those police officers who've been abusing protests around the country? That would send a message to stop the abuse. He has the power to do that. He doesn't use it. So nice to hear his words. He's a great speaker. He smiles beautifully. He has a great family. He's got great rhetoric. But where's the meat? What's he doing? Every policy he's put forward benefits the 1%. His health plan entrenched the insurance industry further. His regulation of Wall Street made the big banks bigger.
So, Kevin,
he's not doing anything for the 99%.
Well, it's there's no question. I think that the public feels a lot like you do, and we're going to be talking to a senior advisor to Ron Paul's campaign later in the program. There is a kind of a sense of plague on both their houses. When you said earlier, Kevin Zeese, that there's no way he can run a third-party candidate for president because the game is rigged against him, against third parties, what about the notion of capturing this corrupt party, the Democratic Party. If the far right wing in this country can capture the Republican Party and push the Republican agenda to the right, why can't progressives in this country capture the Democratic Party?
Because there are two different parties, and what happened to the Republican Party was the Tea Party put forward issues that are always supported by corporate power. They wanted less regulation of the insurance industry. They wanted less government involvement in health care. They wanted less regulation of the financial industry. Those are the positions that the Republican Party takes anyway. That's the same issues that the Club for Growth support. In fact, we've seen Club for Growth candidates rebrand themselves as Tea Party candidates and stand for the same thing. So all that is the grassroots and the money and interest coming together. In the Democratic Party, President Obama is kowtowing to the money and interest. He's going around the country raising $1 billion. He's holding fundraisers that charge $38,500 to get into. That's more than the median individual income of Americans. If you make the median income, you cannot afford to go to an Obama fundraiser. On the other hand, there are some people in the Democratic Party, some voters, who are on the left of center. Some are progressive, who oppose war, who oppose Wall Street. But there's a discord, a dissonance between the moneyed interest in the Democratic Party and the progressive voting interest. So unlike the Republican Party, where they're in tune with each other, in the Democratic Party, they're at odds with each other. So for 40 years, unions have tried to get representation in the Democratic Party, and they have failed. In fact, Taft-Hartley, the notorious anti-union law of the 1950s, would not have become law without the votes of Democrats in the Senate. You look at the civil rights movement. They made their most of their gains before they allied themselves with the Democratic Party, when they criticized both parties. Ever since the civil rights movement became a Democratic Party arm, they've gone nowhere. Every measurement of black leading, incarceration, health care, income, wealth is going the wrong direction. And so if you give your vote to the Democratic Party, you get nothing in return. So lots of people have tried to move the Democratic Party to the left. They've failed, and their movements have been destroyed by it. We do not want this Occupy movement destroyed by going in the Democratic Party. We need to focus on building an independent movement supported by independent media that will stand up to the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, pressure both parties, try to change the electoral law so you can have real elections, not mirage elections, as we have right now in the country. We have fake elections where both candidates are supported by Wall Street, and that's the only choice we really get. We need to change the election laws before we waste our time in the electoral system. That will be a drain of resources that will get us nowhere. I think that lesson is pretty obvious from the experience of many in history. So if you want to see what we're going to be doing, go to OccupyWashingtonDC.org. You can read our deficit commission reports. You can see how easy it is to actually solve the deficit and economic problems if we would just challenge 1%. And you can see where we stand on moving into the Democratic Party. We oppose it. We're going to remain independent. We're going to challenge both parties.
But how would you be able to get your budget proposals anywhere into law if there's no political representation? I mean, the country...
How did the Egyptians get rid of Mubarak?
Well, that's...
representation. How did the Tunisians get rid of their dictator with no representation? You're going to see an angry citizens' revolt. You see the seedlings of it now in just 2 months. Look how much the Occupy movement has shifted the debate. Wait till the American spring. Then you'll see this Occupy movement go into its teenage years. And you think the terrible twos are having an impact. Wait till you see what happens when we're angry teenagers. Because this is a movement built on great frustration for very good reason. The corruption of our economy, the corruption of our government is extremely deep, and we're going to keep calling that out until it cannot no longer withstand the critique of the people. The Occupy movement, the Tea Party movement have their roots in the same economic insecurity. We have different solutions. But I think many of the Tea Party, as they start to think this through more and see what we stand for, will join our side. You're going to have an across-the-board political revolt in this country against both parties. They should not be so confident that their ability to keep us out of elections and their ability to have mirage elections is going to protect them from the wrath of the people. The people are angry.
Well, there's no question that the people are shut out from this corrupt political system that is based on money. And if we do, as we clearly have, a government of the oligarchs by the whores and hirelings of the oligarchs and for the oligarchs, that your point is well taken, Kevin. The only way to get a government of the people, by the people, and for the people is for the people to demand it. It's actually there in the Constitution, in the preamble, that when a government becomes destructive of these, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, etc. And then it goes on to say, when a government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to overthrow it and replace it. So are we at that point?
And I think that we have a process to do that in the United States. I think what you're going to see develop is a large mass movement that's going to remake the electoral system, that in the end will get money out of politics, that will end corporate rule and really shift power to the people. And that's going to be I'm not going to say it's going to happen quickly. I'm not going to say it's going to happen easily. We never saw the occupation of Washington, D.C. as the final step. We saw it as the first step. We see this as a multi-year effort. And building an independent movement that cannot be ignored and will make radical changes, transforming this country into a real participatory democracy and no longer an oligarchy as we become. And it's time for that to happen. This has been a long time coming. For decades now, corporate powers have been focused on taking control of all mechanisms of control of this government, Congress, the courts, the White House, as well as universities, the media, think tanks, journals, and this is a plan laid out in 1971 by Lewis Powell when he wrote to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and he laid out this exact plan. And this is back to the 40th anniversary of that plan being put in place. And if you want to see that plan, you can see it on itsoureconomy.us. Just search Powell memo, P-O-W-E-L-L. 2 months later, he was appointed to the Supreme Court by President Nixon. And shortly after that memo was delivered to the Chamber of Commerce, within 1 year, it doubled in size. The number of lobbyists in Washington vastly increased, and we saw the beginning of a shift of power to corporate interests. And as a result, we have seen a dramatic decline in progressive taxation. We've seen a decline in the capital gains tax, which used to be treated like income, and we've seen the shrinkage of power to the people. Now we have to undo that mess that was been building up for 4 decades. People have woken up. People are getting organized and getting mobilized, and it's just the beginning of what's going to become a significant and historic national movement.
Well, Kevin Zeis, I thank you so much for joining us here this evening.
Thanks for having me on.
Again, I've been speaking with attorney and activist Kevin Zeis, who is the co-director of It's Our Economy. He's also the director of Come Home America and serves on the steering committees of the Bradley Manning Support Network and October2011.org. He has been active in third-party electoral politics and served as Ralph Nader's press secretary and spokesman in 2004. He ran for Maryland's U.S. Senate seat on the Green Party ticket in 2006 and was the only person ever nominated by the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, and the Populist Party. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back in a moment speaking with Jacob Heilbrun about whether the neocons are coming back. Some presidents and $100,000 watches. Some of the feds got us, some of us dead. A lot of us still solid though, using all the lips the streets taught us. And what that heat cost us, and what that loss gave us. With the people, it's always gonna come back around. It's about to be big movements from below. The golden age lies ahead. Struggles proceed. You can't lie to yourself.